politically incorrect.
Correct.
This is Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on TNT Radio.
And welcome back. And welcome back again to Alistair Pope and David Jamieson, two former military men who have been expounding the virtues of our inadequacies within the Defence Department in Australia, amongst other things. Now, one thing I was going to ask David was about, we've got a lot of inadequacies everywhere, but I'm just wondering to what extent the Returned Servicemen's League is still relevant.
We've lost him, I think, Mike.
Lost me? Lost David?
No, David's on mute.
David's on mute. You'll have to turn your mute button off. There we go. Now, David, did you hear my question?
Yes, I did. The issue with the RSL is that it's more than just an ex-service organisation representing veterans across the country. It's a national institution that provides a footprint right across the country that has as its objective looking after veterans, advocating for their benefit, and providing an opportunity for the community to express their appreciation of what our servicemen and women have done on behalf of the country. So it's more than just a club for ex-service people. It's an institution that should be promoting the welfare and well-being of both serving and former ADF members and building support into the community. It's also the only really legitimate voice to talk to the community and the government about defence policy issues, because it's talking with the authority of 102,000 men and women who gave their lives to keep us free and keep our way of life the way it is. So it's a very important institution. Unfortunately, I think it's pretty much lost its way at the moment, and we don't have the innovative and energetic leadership and visionary leadership that we need there. But then when you have a look at the other aspects and other sections of our community, this is an Australia-wide problem. You tell me which segment of the Australian community has energetic, visionary leadership that captures the imagination of the general public. It's pretty hard to find it.
I think on that point, Mike, what we're seeing, it's almost a cancer running through our total community, where we've abrogated our seems like I've gone a bit haywire. I think we've lost our way. I know that. What have I got to do here?
No, you're all right. I can hear you.
Okay, right. I thought I was getting a lot of feedback and double down. So all I'm observing with what David had to say there was the RSL are showing the symptoms probably of our community and our urging to be anything but productive and making our own way. We're being sort of shut down at every level of opportunity, and we're talking about the lack of facilitation of our defence departments, but it's almost, now we mentioned the RSL and we've got a problem there, at every turn it feeds back into what we were starting off on this particular program for, the defence of the nation and the lack of support to attend to that. But we keep hearing at everything we are trying to do here or elsewhere, nothing is working on behalf of the majority of people. But in reverse to that, the majority of people aren't really interested in their own well-being. Alistair, I know you in how you're seeing the lack of enthusiasm for so much that we should all be trying to do. Where do we go? How do we start to get somebody fire in the belly, for want of a word?
Well,
It's going to be very difficult, actually, because the education system has been polluting the minds of people for the last 30 years. Now, I have to admit that my education in Scotland was actually excellent. Now, we didn't have anything to do with politics there whatsoever. There was bias. And in fact, I did extremely well in history. And obviously, I'm a student of history to this day.
Yep.
But I wasn't allowed to take history at the higher level. And the reason for that was that I wouldn't support Prince Charles, not the current one, the previous one from the 1745 rebellion. I thought he was a useless alcoholic, person that would just actually destroy Scotland, which is what he did. And so when I was very unsupportive, and I used to write my own schoolboy essays at the time saying that this guy, actually, I would have been on the opposite side. I would have been supporting the English to wipe him out. And, of course, that didn't go very well. So they kicked me out of history despite high marks. Yeah. And that put me into geography, which turned out to be a good move, because then I learned things I would never have studied privately. So that actually ended up very well. Anyway, listen, I want to go back to what, before I give you the answer there, I want to go back to something there that was mentioned earlier about the hierarchy of the military. If you remember in Morrison's days, there was the famous statement, the standard you walk past is the one you accept.
That's the general you're talking about, not... That's the general you're talking about, Alistair, not the Prime Minister.
Not this Prime Minister.
And that was written by Catherine MacGregor, but she actually got it from somewhere else. And so that was related to this Jedi Council where people were receiving all sorts of pornography. Now, several officers actually got sacked. They never opened the emails. They just deleted them. And yet the culture there was to get rid of people who were even part of this. Now, there were some people opened them. And in fact, I wrote a rule within one of the major companies of the world that if you received this, you only lost your job if you passed it on. I didn't want people to become snitches or do anything else, but if you received it and said, that's not for me, and deleted it, that was fine by me. I didn't want people to become informers on each other. But if you passed it on, then you would lose your job if it was found out. Now, that wasn't what was applied here. People who had received these but not even opened them lost their jobs. Now, follow that on, that a couple of years later, they had one of the large consulting firms came in to look at the attitude of the lieutenant colonel level to transgenderism and I call them the LBGQ QWERTY. Group.
Yep, good.
In fact, seven lieutenant colonels were sacked because they said they would not support it. And they actually lost their jobs and resigned from the military. Now, take the next lot. 18 retired officers took out a full-page advertisement in the Australian saying, we've got to do something about climate change or we'll all fry and die. By the way, I was out today and I was freezing. And now we've got these 32 officers who wrote to the CDF, General Campbell, saying, please, sir, can we do something about our wars and their effect on climate change? And my answer to that when I wrote an article for Quadrant on it was to say, look, at least they've outed themselves. Now we know 32 other officers that need to go gardening. What you said was that there is a cancer within the system. And so if you want to tell the truth, that's actually, as Orwell said, that becomes revolutionary. The revolutionaries get shot. Now, Lysenko actually had several other biologists shot by Stalin when they didn't support his crazy ideas. Now, these people should be resurrected and pardoned, and Lysenko should be in the dustbin of history. There is now a term called Lysenkoism where you falsely use history, you falsely use science. But the point I'm making there is that who's going to stand up as individuals? Individuals stand up and they can be knocked down. Whack-a-mole. There's another individual arguing the case. And they just get destroyed by the system because the system is now self-perpetuating. When Campbell goes, I'm going to be very interested to see who's picked next because what's been happening since even prior to the Morrison days, the woke generals have been picking each other to follow on after themselves. And so the whole system is now corrupted by, can you fight a war? Not interested. Do you support transgenderism? Absolutely behind it. Oh, You're going to the front of it, my boy.
And probably in front of it. What about their climate change attitude?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The climate, these people wrote, 32 officers signed a letter to the general saying, please help us do something with climate change. They can all see their careers blossom. I mean, as David said, we need a complete wipeout of a lot of the military from the very top. Cancel the contracts and we can get people in literally from outside of the military, because we're now fighting a new type of asymmetric war. We can get people in who have had no prior military experience who can actually contribute to our warfighting abilities, particularly in areas like cyber security and cyber attacks, particularly people who come in from outside who know how to fly drones, who know how to build these things. By the way, Vietnam builds their own drones now. You know, Turkey actually took the old Predator and actually redesigned it within 3 years, built the Bekaa, and attached to it virtually Hellfire missiles, and that's the ones that they've been selling to the Ukrainians and the Azerbaijanis. They did that in 3 years. And we've now been considering the use of drones since 2007. Haven't quite come to a decision yet.
Well, you've got to have committees to think about all those things, haven't you? Committees can't make decisions. They talk about it.
Yeah, they do. In fact, we actually initially looked at the Predator in 2012 when it had been in service for at least 5 years. It was retired as obsolete in 2018 while we were still considering buying it. And then we thought, well, we better have a look at the Reaper, which is the replacement. Now we've cancelled the order for the Reaper, the armed drone, and put the money into cybersecurity, because, you know, cybersecurity doesn't hurt anyone. You get a drone with a Hellfire missile on it, you can actually do harm to some humans. Terrible.
Alistair, yet again, I've just got off the floor, back up on the chair. We are absolutely astounding in our desire to be incompetent by the sounds of it. You know, we're not going anywhere. And you're saying we've got to have a sweep out of all those in charge. But the more I look around me at the moment, I have quite a few people I know that are, you know, speaking out. I don't think there's hardly one under the age of 69. The voice of the people will soon be gone, because we'll all be in a box somewhere and doing the wrong thing by ourselves. So the youth of today, the majority of the people that we all, you know, interrelate with, we're not aware, and yet we're being sort of crushed by incompetence, and we'll all disappear. Now, I suppose I'm trying to do something for myself and my family, and I know you are doing the same. And Doug's Mr. Tennessee's right out of town. He's moved up to the northern half of the northern hemisphere. But the people are not aware of what has been done to them, and they're aided and abetted, or those that are doing it, by a completely compliant media that doesn't tell the truth. I mean, this radio station that we're on right now is being castigated because we want to go and try and tell the truth.
It's a revolutionary act.
It used to be.
You're not following the mean, you're not following the crowd. And by the way, I wrote a poem for my grandson, because he's very much a lateral thinker, great kid, and he looks exactly like me.
Very handsome.
Yeah, I put in this poem I wrote for him, and I have a picture there, and I said, and it goes his own way, and you have this cartoon which I picked up from somewhere where the crowd is all going one way, and he's turned right, and he's walking alone down a separate road, and I said, he does his own thing. He's my sort of kid. He doesn't follow the norm.
Well, that we've got to have a lot more people actually questioning, and seriously questioning, what is being proposed for them, and yet, you know, when 90-odd% of the people have all been forced into a vaccination program, coercion, and yet our Prime Minister said, we're not coercing or making you do it, but if you don't do it, you can't keep your job. I don't get the connection there. That's pretty guaranteed that you've got to turn up and get jabbed.
Yep.
And I was reading somewhere, I don't know whether it was today or yesterday, about how this election We've had 2 years of lockdowns, forced injections of people, all sorts of things, and it's barely been mentioned. And yet there's a major election going on in this country. I assume it'll happen elsewhere around the world. You know, nothing to see here. But it should have been front and center of the debate. But both major protagonists are on the same page. So we're not getting a debate. We're not getting it. And then we've got the media choosing to tell nothing about what the hell's going on.
Well, it gets even better because the next pandemic's arrived. It's called monkeypox.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting one. Our good friend, Professor Steele's all over that one already. And we'll have to get him back on to explain it. But, you know, he's now being attacked because he says, well, it's probably a bit of a load of cobblers, but it's being put out there. And it's whacked in with a monkey or a bat or something. We've got to have an animal there to frighten us a bit more to do something about something which is not that critical. But it's part of the overarching fear tactics of whoever's behind it all. I don't know who it is. I keep hearing the World Economic Forum or the WHO. That one's a classic.
The problem in this country is that we've lost the art of critical thinking, and the schools are becoming more and more indoctrination centres rather than education centres. So we don't teach our kids how to critically examine issues and come up with you know, a reasonable, if you like, hypothesis after it. And
it's a bit like our news people not telling us the news. All they do is give us their opinions, which have been put in their heads by someone else. Now, we're going to have to break for a moment. We'll come back because I don't want to cut you off, but we'll go to a short break and we'll come back to the very point you discussed.
We need to get on to that one.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
Where it's almost like it's the devil's own award ceremony. You know, they're demons rewarding demons with prizes, you know. A hotter spot in hell for the best and most effective vaccine. You know, Pfizer got this and Moderna got that. That's what it is, you know. That's really what it is. If people could actually see what this is, if they had eyes to see, they would see what this is. It's not something that's beneficial to the world. And this business of this plan that you talked about as well, and I concur 100%, it's not a case of, okay, you get your two shots, we're done with you. No, this is going to be a constant, regular thing. Do not fall for the lie that was told 2 years ago, like you take your two shots, you've stepped up to the plate, you're a patriot, you'll be safe, you won't transmit, everyone can go back to normal. No, you need your first booster shot, you need your second booster shot, you're going to need an annual shot with a flu shot, your children are going to have to get these shots even though there's no risk to them.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Revealing Ukraine.
Good morning, Mr. Medvedchuk. I'm Oliver Stone.
It started as a peaceful protest in one of Europe's busiest capitals.
Big politics. And suddenly, Ukraine?
Because I care about war and peace, and I'm a citizen of the world. I was in Vietnam War.
Borders of Europe cannot be redrawn with force.
As a citizen of Ukraine, I am a supporter of territorial integrity.
And I learned a lot about Ukraine, and I worked on Ukraine on Fire. Interviewed Mr. Putin. I feel sorry for Ukraine because
gunmen took control of another government facility.
Fighting with Moscow-backed rebel groups is ferocious.
This is an act of aggression by Russia.
Russian election interference.
Keep pressing. It's very easy.
Revealing Ukraine continues investigations on the ongoing Ukrainian crisis.
Introduce yourself to people who don't know anything about you.
Paul Manafort consulted for Viktor Yanukovych.
That Manafort was in the pay of who? Where does George Soros figure in all this?
It's the birth of a nation.
Fascisti! Ukraine remains on a hair trigger.
The way towards change goes through peaceful protests.
Wall Street people make money on this.
I can say that we, unfortunately, were right.
Russian forces fire upon three naval vessels.
I was not in favor, and still am not in favor, of Ukraine joining NATO.
Russia did not help me.
Take me through the events, through Maidan and up to the present. Why do so many Ukrainians hate Russia so much? Who controls the media? Who shot the protesters? Do you have an idea?
Revealing Ukraine at salemnow.com.
What if you were wearing something sexy? What if you were drinking? What if you made the first move? No matter what, sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit rain.org. That's RAINN.org. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, reminding you it's never your fault.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
This is the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
And this is Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessy and Richard Carson. And our special guests are Alistair Pope and David Jamieson, who have given us some insight into the inadequacies of our own Australian Defence Department and those that surround it, particularly the bureaucrats and the politicians. Now, David, getting back to the point you were making before we went to the break, I'd like you to expound on what we were talking about.
You got him?
Well, when we went to school and were educated, one of the things we were taught was logic, we were taught economics, we were taught how to critically think through issues and build a logical outcome in our minds, that sort of stuff. At the moment, that sort of education seems to have gone away, and now kids are being told what they have to believe, and there's no room for questioning what is being taught them. So the idea that there should be a free exchange of ideas to build the knowledge and build the ability to consider all the factors around an issue seems to have been taken out of our education system. And I felt the universities there, that they used to be places where you could discuss issues, you could argue about them, you could have debates, and you didn't have to have the same opinion as your lecturer or your professor, but it was an exchange of ideas that built, if you like, the intellect of those that were going to go forward into the workforce and into other areas of our society. So it seems to have gone. And now we're left with kids who are scared stiff of climate change because the teachers have told them to be scared stiff, and they haven't got the capacity to think through the issues and evaluate what their teachers are telling them. So we're really headed down a very dangerous pathway.
Now, that's happening. A lot of people have been excluded from their employment because they've chosen not to be vaccinated or injected. I'd rather use that word. There is a little tiny trickle of light with people saying, I'm going to start my own school, and you know, to re-employ themselves, they're going to break out of whatever they're doing. In reverse to that, we've got whole rafts of structures that are struggling for staff, like nursing or teaching, because they've been pushed out of their employment areas. So the next couple of years, we're going to have a situation where either you're in the boat or the others of us that are perhaps not in the boat. I don't know where we all end up. Somewhere else are we going to... what are we going to get now? The monkey virus. Is that the new problem?
The monkey pox is the latest one. Don't worry, there's another one right behind it.
Is that, what's it going to be called? The echidna one? Or?
Oh, I don't know.
We just have an indigenous one, don't we?
Well, we might get one. I was mentioning Professor Steele a minute ago, and with the Wuhan, or whatever you want to call the first virus, when they were saying it was a bat to a pangolin to a human, he quickly got that off the agenda by just proving how idiotic it was and how impossible it was by the sheer number of mutations. And it became a number that none of us could have written down in 54 lifetimes. It's impossible. It didn't happen, and it doesn't happen. Now we've got something else coming out of left field. But as there's no thinking probably caused by our education system. Everyone runs around and hides in their cupboard because there's some other little virus out there. I think I saw today, it was first noted about 1954 when there was just a minor attack. So it's been here. Most of these things have been here many times before. And with a bit of intelligence, we stop and take, you know, take notice, but keep going on with our lives. I can't imagine what would have happened in the First or Second World War with the current ethos that's out there in the community. We would have been done over in about 4 minutes. What do you reckon, Alistair?
Well, a couple of things here. If you go back to the great influenza of 1918-1919, which killed somewhere between 50 and 100 million people, it didn't even stop World War One, and people just kept going. Now, you'll see all sorts of pictures where people were wearing masks and they were taking out the bodies and so on. But that didn't even cause a hiccup in the world. And yet what we've got here in Australia is we're up to just over 7,000 supposed COVID deaths. By the way, if you look up the Johns Hopkins University, you'll find that 9,000 people have died of the common flu in the same period. We still get more flu deaths, but I don't remember. And by the way, COVID is now rated as the 38th most common cause of death in Australia. I haven't seen anything that says start worrying about the top 37. And yet, if you take stroke and heart disease into account, in the last 12 months, there have been over 100,000 deaths from stroke and heart disease combined. Yet no one's telling me that I'd better do something about my heart and all of that, and I should worry about it, stop exercising and drink more red wine. No one's telling me that.
Well, I think they should.
I think they should too.
I think I'm in favour.
To go on from there, I actually did this. I got some near-death threats from what I thought were friends of mine when I pointed out to them I objected to not being invited to an annual dinner because I was unvaxxed. And the stream of abuse that I got back from people I've known for 40 years was quite amazing. But I then did a statistical analysis and pointed out the number of deaths that had occurred. Now, I don't know if you realise that there were no deaths between the 8th of December 2020 and the 1st of July 2021. Actually, that's not true. There was one death, and he was a classmate of mine at officer training, and he died in March. So you had no deaths for 8 months. When did we start the vaccinations?
Oh, was it April or May or something?
April.
April.
And the deaths then started April 21. Climbing up to 1,600 a month in the month of August, just after we started the first vaccination. Then they went down again. Someone said that was because it was winter. Well, when we had 810 deaths in Victoria during the quarantine period. There was only 909 deaths in total, and 810 were Dan Andrews quarantines.
Yep.
So we then had this period of 8 months with no deaths. Now we're up to 7,000. There's been another spike. Now we've got the triple vaxxed are occurring. And in fact, I told you earlier that someone who's on your radio show, his mother-in-law died. Dropped dead at 71 while doing some gardening. No prior known heart problems. And I had coffee last night with a very good friend of mine I hadn't seen for a while, and he said he'd just come back from the funeral of a lady who was, and this got me. I said, this can't be true. He said she was in hospital, she had COVID, and they actually gave her a vaccination and she died 2 days later. She already has COVID in the vaccinator, and she died 2 days later.
I mean, that's criminal behaviour for want of a word. But you know, we talk about from that following on, trust the scientists. But the scientists and the immunologists, in the majority of cases, are all in the same boat. You know, cheering on the vaccinators, the Pfizers and the AstraZenecas of the world, and there's umpteen amounts of evidence that says it's all wrong. Yes. They've got it completely wrong. And
one of the problems that I think that we've got is that we use the word scientist far too loosely.
Mm.
Their area of science is not in immunology and in virus and all that sort of stuff half the time. They specialise in other areas, but we still listen to them as if they're demigods and understand the whole issue that they're sprouting about, and of course they don't.
100%, David. They're in other fields of endeavour. I mean, we've all got some skill somewhere, but to just have a blanket charge made against people speaking out, you've got to trust the science. Straight away, you've got, I'll use the word bullying, to quieten down an alternative point of view. But we actually need points of view. Open and honest debate won't hurt anyone, but it puts information in front of the majority, and then individuals can start to sort out what part of it they think's right and wrong. That's what we're not doing. We're completely avoiding it.
That's the issue we spoke about before.
I know.
People are confronted by, you know, arguments and discussions and debates, and people who come up with facts and figures. So, you know, where are we headed as a society?
Just today I saw that the first case of monkeypox has been detected in Massachusetts. And the Biden administration has just announced that they're buying $193 million worth of vaccines for it, because it's a relation to smallpox. And they're going to buy this freeze-dried vaccination for $193 million. One case. Now, yeah. I like preparation and planning, but that seems to have gone over the top. Sort of like Greg Hunt buying 180 million doses of Pfizer so that we can inject the 23 million people in Australia who might be dumb enough to actually take the vaccine.
Well, there was probably a nice commission somewhere in the background there.
Nasty. I want to see what his next job is now he's out of politics.
I think it might be with the WEF. I don't know what they do, but I'm sure that's where he'll be heading.
I think the term is Gauleiter.
What's that?
I think the term is Gauleiter.
Oh, right. Okay. We haven't solved the problem. We've discussed the errors of the education system. We have the problem of the military people not wanting to take responsibilities for the procurement of the weapons that might help the people on the front line do their job. And we've got a pile of politicians that are just, as we say, following the career without actually having any skill set to do anything other than put their hand up in Parliament. So from that little point on, where do we go with the modern military leadership? I think you're saying you've got to sack them all, but who do you bring in to start to do a changeover of what we've currently got? Where do we start?
David?
He's not going to talk to me.
That's the $64,000 question, isn't it? Where do you start? Because in the officer producing academies these days, they're inculcated with the sort of woke and environmental, if you like, issues, and we've lost our focus on being a defence force that is there to defend the country and to hone its skills, its killing skills, essentially, so that people would think twice about invading us or taking us on. So it's a good question, but the answer is not easy, because you've got to start somewhere. And I mean, the only way you can really do this is if you have a prime minister and a cabinet who are visionary, who are strong, who understand the environment in which the country exists, and are prepared to take on the bureaucrats and the military people and direct the way they should be acting, if you like, the responsibilities that they need to take up and the focus that they should have. Now, it's easy to say that, but how do you do it? It's, you know, the whole system has gone away from the original focus to have a defence force. In fact, the government doesn't understand defence, because it's not just the ADF and its weapons and the immediate support for it. It's almost a whole of country thing. Your agriculture, your industry, your manufacturing, they're all part of, and design, are all part of the country's defence system. Yet you try and get the Defence Department to address anything but its immediate, if you like, focus of producing people that say, pretty please, can I kill you? you're sort of lost. It's just not there.
You'll love this one. I like wearing, believe it or not, 30 years after I've left the army, I still wear army socks. I like the nice woolen socks.
Right.
I went and actually bought some and found they were made in China.
Yep.
All right. They'll be able to get them back.
The current army uniforms are made in China.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. And the point that David was just talking about, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, we gutted whatever manufacturing we had. And I mean, we've sent it offshore and that's the way the world's gone. But all of a sudden, as these crises start to develop, we have now got an issue in almost being self-sufficient. We have no hope in doing it. I think we're being asked to pop off for another one of those long-winded breaks, but we'll come back and just flesh out those circumstances that you blokes are alluding to right now and how we might be able to put a bit of stiffener into the backbone of our collegiate nation, because it's not there at the moment.
How do you keep a public health scare going endlessly? Declare that unchecked climate change will cause more COVID.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Our public health overlords are now officially merging COVID and climate. They want to keep both COVID and climate fairs humming along to push their so-called tyrannical solutions. Bill Gates announced this merging of the two on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah this week.
It's going to keep happening, particularly with climate change, where we're invading a lot of habitats.
But the science does not support Gates' claims. As Sterling Burnett of the Heartland Institute has pointed out, in reality, if a modestly warming Earth had any impact on viruses and pandemics, it would be to make them less likely and less severe. See how merging COVID and climate into one issue works? Worried about COVID-19? Then support the UN Paris Climate Pact or the Green New Deal or carbon taxes, or else you will be a grandma killer. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT? Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, we'll have to get some new TNT, won't we, very shortly, Richard, because the election ballot box is closing in Australia. Within 18, a matter of 20 minutes.
20 minutes. That'll be an exciting night.
And I'll tell you why it won't be exciting, Richard. It's simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
There will be breaking news every 30 seconds, and the noise of that will drown out whatever news there is. And whatever news there is not really news, it's someone's opinion. Because what they do on these nights, they flood the television sets and the radio lines with people who are either ex-politicians or soon to be ex-politicians. And sometimes you see some interesting moments on the television coverage of an election here in Australia where you've got a sitting member who suddenly realises they're
losing
votes.
He's not a member.
Well, they're no longer a member.
Oh.
And the look on their faces is a study.
Well, that's what
we
want.
Quite a study. And
I'm going to be watching for them all night.
Are you?
Oh,
the beauty about not being in Australia at the moment, Richard, is that I haven't had to put up with that dreadful advertising that they go on with before an election.
It has been.
And the thing I read today was that this year, because people were allowed to cast a vote before the polling day, that together with the postal votes meant that the people who went to hand out how to vote cards had very little to do at the polling booths.
There'll come
a time where we don't have to vote at all. And we'll just have to rely on the public servants.
Well, the way we're talking at the moment, Mike, I'm afraid we may well be heading that way too quickly. I think I'd rather live my life as an independent thought and do things constructively and make my own decisions. So I won't be participating in that particular philosophy. I'm sure Alistair won't, and I don't think David's of that ilk either, and I know you're not. So these old warriors sitting around microphones this afternoon will be railing against it for as long as we can. That's our agenda. And Alistair, I I don't know what we're going to do about the rest of the nation, but I think it's imperative that people do talk out, do speak up, and start, you know, I don't know what you do. You try and talk to a politician, but they've got a wall of a cone of silence around them. You can't even, I think it was either you or David making the comment, you send out missives when they won't even reply. Can't even, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I mean, David and I have both met lots of politicians, but it's like talking to a brick wall. If you're not following the meme that they have been beaten into by the party of their public servants,
yeah,
to actually repeat, then they don't want to know. And in fact, David and I have both had examples actually where we tried to tell a politician and he didn't want to know. And I've had politicians actually agree with me, but and in fact, one actually told me about something else, nothing that we've talked about here.
Right.
He said that he absolutely agreed with me that no party would actually take up the argument I was putting up, because it was too, not politically incorrect, it was too contentious with a particular group of people.
But haven't we fallen into an absolute abyss of hopelessness?
Yes.
When we can't even have a chat to an elected member that's with a pertinent point of view that might actually be for the benefit of the nation at large, and yet they're going to go and run away and hide behind a curtain or something or other. At every level, we talk about we've got to do something with the hierarchy of the Defence Department. We have to do something. Well, this was an election. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's obviously now incumbent on a few of us to try to even change the political structure and those parties that are in it. We've got a two-party system, really, a duopoly, and they don't differentiate themselves, really. Sure, a couple of people on either side get sort of wasted every election, but in the main, the body politic remains the same and the philosophy doesn't change much. And then we are...
Well, I think the election is going to be a little... interesting. We're going to see the impact of social media vis-a-vis the mainstream media.
Right.
And with all the range of parties in the centre and with people's disillusionment of the two major parties, perhaps we might be beginning to see the start of a changed political environment itself. It's too early to say. We'll have to wait and see what the voters are telling us. But you know, there are people now out there prepared to come forward, put their point of view outside the two-party system. So there is hope. We can't lose hope. We've got to have hope.
No, David, I agree 100% with where you're coming from, because I've been agitating a little bit in the background and I've got to be careful what I say. But certainly a lot of people I speak with, I've had people ring me and saying, how do I vote? And these are people that I would have thought would have known how to vote. But they're not following it closely enough, and they know I'm a bit of an agitator in this area. And you tell them, and you think, heaven forbid, this is, you know, a fairly intelligent person, but they still don't know what to do. And then you come back to the education system and everything else that's just been sort of foisted upon the nation at large, and people aren't up to being critical. You just touched on it before with the education. They're not taught to be critical or self, making themselves self-aware. I hope, like heck, that there is a bit of a shock comes out of this one, and perhaps one of the parties says, we're on the wrong track. We better do something about it.
David, what do you think of this byline? This is by a guy called Will Glasgow in today's Australian newspaper. And he starts off by saying, Beijing is cautiously optimistic that relations with Australia will improve if Anthony Albanese wins government. China's party state media accused Scott Morrison of playing an anti-China card while reinforcing Canberra's assessment that Beijing has been trying to wait out the government. I mean, what sort of lunacy is that?
When you think about it, are we looking at the parallels between Europe in the middle to late 1930s and what we're seeing around here now? It's a bit sort of eerie that there are too many parallels.
Yeah.
And, you know, we
I think Alistair's already mentioned that on a previous program, haven't you, Alistair?
Yeah, but the salami slicing that goes on, we just cut away a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
but David's quite right. I mean, we're now following the same playbook. And exactly what's happening in the South Pacific is exactly what Japan and Germany were doing in the 1930s. I'll take over Sri Lanka. I'll take over Vanuatu. I'll grab these islands. I'll put a military base into here. I mean, one day we'll find Amelia Earhart was captured by the Japanese.
At that point, Adam Bant will be out there negotiating.
No. He'll be the Gauleiter of Australia. He'll be put in charge of Australia.
Oh, fair enough.
He'll be the Quisling that we put in charge of Australia. There are people...
Too much of his concrete dust over his leprechauns at the bottom of his garden. It's toxic.
Yeah, I'm going to watch with interest tonight, even though you're well out of the way up there, Mike. You won't know. I'll send you a message at about 10:30. I know another tragic mate that you and I know a little bit about. He'll be lying in the fetal position at about 2 a.m. in the morning, waiting for something to happen, and he won't be. He'll probably be none the wiser. I'm of a mind that we won't know the result for a week or so, because I know there are a lot of people that are of a bent to, you know, put the bastards last, so to speak. I don't know how many of them there are and how they'll go about it, but it will be an interesting watch. And more importantly, how our mainstream media, obsessed with telling the truth, then faces up to an obvious scenario where perhaps a percentage of the population is not too impressed, because they're being very, very, very careful not to say a word.
A very interesting email saying that the UAP and the Liberal Democrat vote had collapsed and was no more than 2%.
Right.
And they went across seven of the seats that may have been won by someone other than the incumbent, may have been won by one of the minor parties or one of the emerging conservative parties. And they basically came back in each occasion and they said it's going to end up as a Liberal or Labour seat, because the Liberal Democrat and the UAP, has collapsed. And Craig Kelly's going to lose his seat. I mean, that's a certainty. He's not going to get more than 15% of the vote.
Right.
I've said that on to several people, and I said, save this and let's see how it works out. Let's see how credible Crikey is. If they're credible, it just reinforces my desire to leave Australia.
And that came from Crikey, did it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll send you the email.
It doesn't matter, because, you know, I wouldn't put a lot of store on what they've got to say, but it may well be right, because when you're standing in a line and the third person in line doesn't know what seat they're in, that tends to make me think, well, what chance have you got of changing anyone's mind? Because they're zombotic, for want of a word. They just haven't got a clue what the hell's going on. I don't think that's quite right. I think there's a feeling around the world amongst a lot of people. They've been coerced into something, and that is getting a vaccination or an injection for something they didn't want. It's been proven it doesn't work, and they're bloody angry. And I'll be waiting to see whether that anger then translates to some degree into it may be by sections of the community. It mightn't be everywhere. Certainly won't be in the inner city lovey-dovey components of North Shore or something. They're all very keen on it. But there's a lot of people in who are actually get out of bed in the morning and you know, grab a hammer and do things in a hard way. I'm not sure that they're that fussed on what's been done to them over the last 2 years. So I'll wait and see if Crikey's got it right or right.
I've got an unvaxxed friend, but all his children and his wife were vaccinated because they all work in the health industry. He refused.
Yep.
Now, his children have said to him, Dad, at your age, you should go and get the flu vax. So he called up the local hospital and said, can I get the flu vax? And said, yes, just bring in your certificate that you've had your COVID vaccination, you're triple boosted. And he said, well, I'm not. And he said, well, we won't vaccinate you for flu. So, I mean, that's not coercion. In fact, that's just an attempt at murder by another means.
Yeah, well, I recommend he doesn't bother with the flu either, because it won't work. I don't wish to be rude about it, but it doesn't work. I think I've never had a worse flu, and I'd had the flu vaccine. It was a couple of years ago, and I came down with the flu, and I was crook. And I thought, well,
I'm with you. I've had one flu vaccine that I can recall a similar result, so I haven't bothered since then.
No, and you're right.
Isn't it the case, Dr. Carson? Isn't it the case that you're a year behind when you get a vaccine?
Well, you are, actually. You are.
Because they haven't got the next lot of flu covered by the vaccine you've just had.
No,
that was last year's flu.
Dr. Tennessee, you're quite correct. And you've just anointed me to be the medical professional on the show.
There is somebody who's very, very close to me who got a flu vaccine.
Right.
Or a flu injection, whatever it was. It was to stop getting the flu.
Yep.
And she came down very heavily with swine flu.
Oh, well, she's obviously
obviously didn't cover the swine flu.
Well, she's mixing in the wrong company if she's coming up with that. but that aside, we know our good friend Professor Steele will tell you that the vaccinations for flu or virus orientated diseases, you've got to do it through your immunomucosal system, not the way it's being presented at the moment, and they haven't got one yet anyway. So
I want to hear more about this monkey flu. The gentleman we've got on, I've all heard of. I've never heard of it.
You're in the wrong country.
Yeah, well, there are plenty of monkeys where I am, I can tell you.
Well, you might catch it tonight.
No, I won't go outside. I've got to go to the airport to deliver some very important diplomatic people to the airport to catch a flight. But I haven't heard of the monkey flu. Is this the one that they've got in the States?
The first cases in the United States, there's 20 cases in England. There's a few other cases around the place. And now they're suggesting that will be the next COVID. It will go like wildfire around the world. Ted Steele will tell you about it. And I actually saw the email that he sent around to everyone. Very long email. I haven't had time to read all of it yet.
We better get Professor Steele on next week and put it to bed, I think.
Alistair, did I hear you say something about the smallpox vaccine being enough to cover the monkeys?
They're doing a variation. And Biden immediately, with one case in America, has ordered $193 million worth, which is 180 million doses. So he's going to get these delivered in the years. You'll like this. They're due to be delivered in 2023, 2024.
Really?
Well, that might be a bit late for a few monkeys, mightn't it?
Exactly.
So if I've been vaccinated against smallpox, will that cover me for the monkey flu?
Well,
there is some suggestion.
I would have said that it's just a slight variation of it. And there's some fairly gruesome pictures on the internet there of people who have got it, of the 20 people
That'll scare us all.
We'll have to wait in Australia at least. Not to mention other countries, we'll have to wait to see who the new Prime Minister is before we know whether or not we're going to have to be vaccinated against the monkey.
As soon as this election is over, the lockdowns will start again.
But if I've been vaccinated against smallpox, admittedly a few years ago, I'll be all right, won't I?
You've got a lifetime exemption from smallpox. The last known case of smallpox was 1964.
What about monkey flu?
It's coming up.
Monkeypox. No, it's still going around. It's mainly been in Africa.
Oh,
right. No, it seems to have escaped from Africa at last.
Well,
Michael, Richard, yes.
I hate to say this, but we're going to run out of time soon. And it's always difficult because you've got two terrific gentlemen on the program this afternoon. David Jamieson has been absolutely unbelievably informative, as far as I'm concerned. Alistair, I've met before. Wonderful, wonderful stuff, gentlemen. And I hope you just keep going, keep sending the emails of all the news, what I would call more than breaking news, frankly. It's shattering news. And I want to thank you very much for coming on. Now, there's a new term for you, Alistair. Instead of breaking news now, they'll be saying shattering news.
I think
and exclusive to this station. It's already about 2 days old, but it's still exclusive to this station. And, David, thank you very much for coming on. Richard, I wish you a very good night. I realise that it's only, it's probably later where you are than I am.
No.
To go for an afternoon swim.
Are you? Well, that's very nice for you. And you won't be, well, you can swim here in the, anywhere at all, because it hasn't stopped raining for 5 weeks.
If we
were having electric cars, we'd have a problem. We haven't seen the
sun. That is a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
They won't go well in the wet. Adam Bant will be able to tell us all about that, because he'll have nothing to do after the election.
I suggest that these two army gentlemen get them to have electric tanks. That's what we want. And electric boats. We'll be all over it. Then we'll be able to beat ourselves. We'll clean up the dolphins.
Yeah. As long as we can tell them to the Chinese, eh?
Well, Richard, we've only got a few seconds. So all the very best to you, to our guests.
David.
Thank you for listening, wherever you may be. And Richard, you look after yourself. I think you need to be looking after yourself more.
Well, I'm getting the monkey shot now.
Well done.
It's called Shiraz.
I'm very pleased to hear it.
Okay.
Bye for now.